This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 230, brought to you by InStock Trades, the Summit City Comic Con, and iFanboy listeners like yo. Hello, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 230, the Annunciation episode. I am Josh Flanagan, and I am here with Ron Richards.
Hello, Josh.
And back by popular demand, who wrote that? Back to Tom Gators.
I'm right behind you, Josh. Right behind you.
In the polls?
No, Tom's ahead of you in the polls, that's for sure.
No. Waiting for a mistake.
I feel like I'm going to be sitting at home on the couch of my wife one time. She'd be like, you know who I bet could have cooked dinner a little bit better? Who? Tom? How do you even know him?
And then I walk in. I'm like, I have a skillet with some pasta and some salsa. I'm like, I just threw this together in the hallway.
I made your favorite, Lindsay. Fuck you, Tom. I choke him to death. Then it gets weird.
Anyway,
iFanboy.com is our website. It's all about comic books. We like them a whole lot. That's kind of the point. We like comics. We read them every week. One of us, we all read comics, and one of us picks the best one of the week. They call that the pick of the week. And we talk about it here on the show and the other books from the week and answer some questions. And, you know, we generally gallivant slightly. Is that, that's not the right word. Doesn't matter. We have fun. Before we get to the show, we're going to talk about the books that came out this week. And so there's going to be some spoilers. We're going to be talking about what's happened to them. So if you haven't read them yet and you're sensitive to that type of thing, like some of you might have been for the Kick-Ass video show. Whoops. it was out in the UK. That one was British. I think
I saw the movie like a month ago. It's old news for me.
I know, me too. Zero-sum game as far as I'm concerned. Listen, you read the book. Anyway, there's going to be spoilers. Sorry. You know what? We have blown spoilers so little in our time that, you know, we're pretty good track record.
We're allowed one. We should probably clarify that Tom has joined us this week because we were recording earlier.
Connor was fired.
Yeah, we fired Connor. We had to let Connor go. It was HR incident, sexual harassment. We don't want to talk about it. No, in reality, we're actually recording this before I leave for Chicago for C2E2. Connor's already in Chicago, so he couldn't make the show. Since Tom isn't in Chicago and broke the hearts of millions, we figured we could bring him on the show again. So thank you, Tom, for joining
us. I'm always around.
Yes. Oh, it's so true now, though.
I know.
This is 24
hours. You email
me. On Twitter.
You email me and I'll respond back in
seconds.
If I'm really busy, it might take up to 30 seconds for me to respond back.
Real life Rear Window just gets funnier and funnier, doesn't it?
Kid is always on that scooter.
Okay, but anyway, so I had the pick of the week, and it was funny because actually last weekend when we were planning for Chicago and everything, Connor emailed me and he's like, "You've got pick of the week this week," as he often reminds me of things I need to do for iFanboy because I'm prone to forget. And
Connor never forgets. That's
Connor never forgets. No,
he's like the fable turtle or elephant, whatever it is.
He's
that
a
animal.
Stern taskmaster, that's for sure. Oh, yeah. Keeps us in line. But he said, "You got pick of the week." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "But it should be an easy one because you're going to pick the Flash number one."
I don't believe you read any other books. No. I think you just read The Flash and wrote this up. That's what I think.
No, I did. I made a concerted effort. I read The Flash number one first, admittedly, but I did make a concerted effort to read all my books. Luckily, I had a light week. I only had like a handful of books. But if you go to ifanboy.com and read my review, and it's kind of apropos that Tom is on the show, considering Tom is now famous due to his association with The Flash and particularly Barry Allen. So I'll be curious to hear what you think of it, Tom. But
ooh.
I haven't been happier reading a comic book in probably 5 years.
Oh,
easily 5 years.
This, really?
Yes. No, seriously. Like, no joke. No joke. Like, when I finished
X-Men Forever Run.
No, that's because that's more tongue in cheek, and we're gonna talk about that a little later. But
of course we.
No, but you gotta say like as much as I love the X-Men, as much as I love Marvel and all this stuff, my connection to DC is through The Flash. And I was spoiled because I got on right when right before John started his run in early 2000. And I read every issue I've read every issue since then. And it also made me realize that he left that book in 05. Okay? Mm-hmm. So all the shit with his kids and all the crap we've been through, that's been the past 5 years. That doesn't feel like 5 years, does it?
Dude, I don't know what the last 5 years has felt like at all.
But no, seriously, like it's been nearly 5 years of not having a good Flash book, and to the point where, I mean, like a year ago, Connor dropped it, and it was just, I mean, it was awful. And I remember it. I mentioned this in my review when they announced Flash Rebirth at San Diego Comic Con. Tom, I texted you that day. Do you remember?
And I said, I do. Yeah. I was in the shower, and I quick grabbed the phone as I heard your ringtone that I have specially for you when you send me comic news. I was all a tingle.
But yeah, but that's how excited I was that Johns was going back to do Flash Rebirth. And at the time, they didn't even announce there was going to be an ongoing. Now, but the thing is that, you know, here we are praising Geoff Johns again, and you think that he's, you know, paying us to do this or whatever, but he's not at all.
I think we bought him a beer that one time, actually.
But
this is bullshit.
But the thing that made this issue so much special is that, you know, we know that Johns can write The Flash. I mean, we know that. Like, that's a proven. He did it for 5 years. Flash Rebirth was great. But Francis Manapul just is unbelievable. You know, and we raved about him in Adventure Comics, but some of the stuff he pulled out for this issue was just, like breathtaking, in my opinion. Like, the...
You know who he reminds me of as I was reading this?
Who?
It reminds me of John Romita Jr.
Interesting. How so?
I just think it's got, like, it's not quite realistic. It's slightly cartoony, but it's got a sort of classic action sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of it's a little more angular. It's not the same exact style as JRJR, but I was like, oh, there's a relation here. And if you look at the way that this is produced compared to the way that like Kick-Ass is produced, it's slightly, it feels a little sketchy, a little light, but the, and the colors are all sort of pastel.
Yeah.
It like that. Anyway,
I could see that comparison. But, you know, in Adventure Comics, we just got blown away by the coloring, which, by the way, we have to give credit to, because on the video show, we talked about colorist Josh. You actually gave Manipul credit for coloring himself, and it turns out he doesn't color himself.
Ooh.
I don't know things.
I know. Give credit to Brian Buccolato for coloring it, because the coloring is such a huge part of it. But there are so many, like, we raved at the two-page spreads in Adventure Comics, and there's a bunch of them in this issue. But Manipul is more than just, like, he's not just a splash page guy. Like, the storytelling was great, the kinetic energy and action, he draws speed so well. But then blew me away with a J.H. Williams III layout with the rogues.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, and it spells out Wanted, which was genius, and with the little flash lightning bolt in the center. I saw that, and I was like, what is that? So
he also did a good job of drawing a city with people in it.
Yes.
Yeah. You have your cities when you think of fictional cities and you have Gotham, and you never really see people kind of just walking around Gotham. You know, they're either getting mugged or they've just been shot or frozen or had acid thrown on them. Right. And Metropolis, everything's a little bit more futuristic. But Central City is really kind of just a city with people doing stuff that do stuff in really busy cities, which is actually kind of a rarity to see someone really draw that in a fictional city. Just so loosely and with so much energy to it. You know, with a park, of course, the park is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Dead people show up at the park. Well, it's just everything, you know, like everything seems so jam-packed, filled with people, like an actual city is.
Yeah. Well, were you glad to see the return to the park? I was looking for the bench. I couldn't find the park bench.
I enjoyed the issue. Not only because it was a really well-written and well-drawn Flash issue, is it's actually, to me, it was such a different type of story from everything else that we've kind of seen from DC lately. Things have been really dark, and there's lots of gore and blood and other stuff. And this Flash story was very breezy, very, I had comedy moments in it, almost like a TV show, like sort of a superhero CSI with a little bit of humor in it. And it wasn't overly serious at any point, which was very different.
Very lighthearted.
This is the Barry that people were lamenting there wasn't in the first chunk of Flash Rebirth, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I've decided to adopt the persona of the people who are really angry about it. I'm going to bring back Wally movement.
Oh, well, you know, Wally is a fresh new character. He was made in 1959.
Exactly.
You know, so he's only 3 years newer than Barry Allen, so keep the youngsters around.
But back to the art thing, one thought idea that I just had real quickly was that actually Manipul's art actually reminds me of Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. Like there's the flashback of Barry and Iris at dinner, and it totally looked, and partially because Day Tripper came out this week. But looking at that flashback, it's a very cartoony, the brothers, you know, kind of style. But, and also there's the page where Flash is run towards the end of the book, where Flash is running and he's running at us, and you see the multiple drawings of the Flash, and one of them he's jumping over a car. I haven't seen the Flash drawn this well in terms of the speed and running through the city. Everyone's just on the Van Sciver, kind of just a bunch of lines and red, you know, and you just get the sense of motion, but you don't actually see the little subtle steps that he takes.
What's interesting is that we had talked to Jeff, I'm not trying to name drop, but we talked to him about an artist that Ron really likes. And I remember that he said it was too cartoony.
Broke my heart.
I know. But then I'm reading this, I'm like, but this is kind of cartoony.
It still doesn't make sense. I don't want to talk about that. But
Okay, that's fine. But in the same way, no, I know what you're saying. I really like the page where the car comes apart. Like he takes the car apart. And the one the panel before it where he's like zooming all around the car and the different things. And I was like, I haven't seen that kind of fun, speedy kind of stuff in a while.
Well, so the issue ends in a way that I didn't expect, with a with, you know, Commander Cold and his crew from the 25th century that looks like the rogues, but now they're cops. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting, because that was a different, you know, it's like still like he's figured out a way to involve the rogues, but now put a spin on it that also plays to the Flash's legacy with the time travel and the, you know, the
and he's going to be late for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now here's my question. Now this is my only little question about it, and this is comics nitpicking or whatever. But so Iris just has a job at the paper again? Like, when did that happen?
So it's not the best comic you've read in the last 5 years.
No, I mean it is.
Which, by the way, is hyperbole. And if I will not claim that. When it comes back and somebody says, you guys said, I didn't say that.
I'm saying it.
Okay, that's fine. Ron is taking that.
The newspaper unions are very strong. So even if you appear to die, you will get your job when you get back. Same with the police unions.
Well, I liked how Barry was in the witness protection program. I thought that was a good answer to that. I was dead.
Yeah. He's very. He looks like he hasn't aged a day, and everyone else has gotten fat.
Exactly.
I did notice that. I was like, so you noticed the fat old guy who's talking about retirement? You worked with him.
And
presumably 20 years ago.
Barry's very fashionable, too. You know, he's sort of got like the hoodie on with the tie. If there was only that threw me off just a little bit, but then it was relax. I had to tell myself to relax.
I know that when I think of Barry Allen, I often think of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I think that they dress very similarly that same way.
The hoodie? Yeah.
Yeah, the hoodie and a nice skinny tie. Yeah. They're almost exactly the same.
Anyway, I loved it. The Flash is back. The book is back. I'm happy. And I mean,
it was a good first issue. I thought it was pretty standard, and I don't mean that in a bad way. And I mean that in the Geoff Johns way. Like, he doesn't tend to break open time and do something you've never thought of. He just, like, does a really good first issue.
I thought it was accessible to new readers. He recapped it in a way where you could just pick up the book and jump right on. You know, he somewhat answered the questions that we had about how is Barry going to fit into the world. Maybe not about Iris, but yeah. But
I think he had to do a lot of the heavy lifting in Flash Rebirth.
Yeah.
So that made this feel like a cleaner experience. I feel like this is the experience that a lot of people wanted out of Flash Rebirth. Yeah. And he got to it.
What I don't understand is at the crime scene with Mirror Master, when Iris calls Barry over and they start talking about like details of the case, like to the crowd. Mm-hmm. You know?
People that know discretion.
I know, yeah, exactly.
That's a better.
Listen, dear, if we do this any louder, people might come to suspect that I am the Flash, so we should probably talk about this later. I will be late for dinner because I will be out being the Flash. Oh, hello.
We're having dinner with Hawkman and Hawkwoman.
Doesn't she call him something too? Like she calls him Fleet Feet. Like what? Like secret identity.
Secret identity.
Well, we're gonna get to that with Green Arrow too. But anyway, yeah. So Flash was great, fantastic. Tom, you liked it? It was you good? You happy? Or
it was very enjoyable. It was a really good start. You know, it's a simple, fun comic. Well drawn. Well done.
I approve.
Yeah.
So Brightest Day number 0 came out to start off the Brightest Day event. And this was a thick book.
Yes, it was.
I wasn't what cover, I expected from the zero issue. No.
The cover art did not match up with the inside, meaning that the inside was a much nicer bit than the...
Oh, someone doesn't like Finch, does he?
Not really. Well,
Finchy,
you know what?
Finchy?
I've seen him do some stuff I kind of like. Something recently I was looking at, it's like not House of M, but was he thinking...
Oh, no, the X-Men Second Coming he did awesome on.
And he did Disassembled, I think I just read that. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And, you know, the early New Avenger stuff. But, like, look at Aquaman on this cover. It's weird looking.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, go on.
I had a weird art thing with it. I forget what issue was it, what comic that was. I got to find it. There was a weird art thing. I don't think it was this issue. But yeah, this is heavy. There are a lot of words in this book.
It was a lot to take, and I found it. What happens a lot with stories like this, where it's going to follow a bunch of different characters, I immediately thought, I kind of don't care about some of these.
Yeah.
Like Hawk.
Eight characters. I don't care about
this
Hawk.
This kind of feels like Countdown.
Hmm.
You remember?
It kind of felt like 52 or like a mix of 52 and Countdown.
Yeah.
A little bit to me.
I know that it was a really bad panel in this one. Well, it's not really bad, but there's when Jade is talking to Kyle and the red girl is trying to get, you know, keep, she's jealous or whatever. I don't know anyone's name. And then, but at the one page where Kyle is like, he grabs her hand and he gets in real close and he takes his mask off. And I was like, who's that meathead?
Oh yeah.
That doesn't look like Kyle. That's a meathead. That's like putty. Yeah. That's not.
It's like putty.
Hey, Jade.
It's like Arby's night tonight.
It's going to be rough.
But so, yeah, so this basically sets the stage for Brightest Night, Brightest Day. And so did it resurrect Star City? Is Star City okay now?
I think it, he turned the wrecked part into a nice park, which will, you know, that's equal to all those people dying.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
Are the Hawk people, are they traveling through time?
They're remembering the next.
Okay.
I think the storytelling wasn't as clear in that. They're just, they now remember all their previous incarnations.
Yeah,
and Hawk Woman, Hawk Girl now remembers all of them as well. And they know who each other are, which doesn't usually work out that way for them. And all of those old characters are like weird 50s DC stories that.
Yeah.
They've now said, "Oh, that was Hawkman." You know,
he's got
like,
that.
Just
he's got that glove from Thundercats, so that's awesome.
wherever you can find it from, but I mean, it did become at times. I was like, "Oh, I'm interested in Aquaman." I was kind of interested in Hawkman just because I think Hawkman's kind of cool. But then I would get to the part with Hawk and Dove, and I'm like, I've kind of read
that's
this
like
story. Thousands.
Who's the guy? Who's the guy? Not the guy who's Magog now. Whatever he was first, like his story in the JSA. I was like, eh.
Yeah. Well, it's the classic. Someone's got to be proactive, you know.
Yeah.
Type.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to take the fight to the villains.
Yeah.
Which now I think it's more rare not to wait for the villains. You know, like there's so many people who are so proactive. It's like every couple months there's someone who's super proactive. But I kind of read that part and I was like, I've kind of seen this before. From this very character, you know, so it was a little up and down in parts, but I was interested enough to keep going with it.
Yeah, that's what I'll give it that. I'm happy. I was happy about some parts. Like I said, I like the Aquaman bits. I like the idea of the Jade bits, although I didn't really like the execution of it. But I liked the Martian Manhunter stuff a lot.
That was really cool too.
So we'll see. You know, I'll read it. It's in all the books anyway.
So you guys are committing to all 27 Brightest Day books in the checklist?
There is a checklist. If you go to DC, it's a PDF checklist.
Yeah,
I'm not getting all those.
It's in the back of the issue. So if you look at it, I mean, there's are you gonna do the Brightest Day miniseries?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you got Green Lantern Corps, Flash, Justice League of America. I buy all those books.
Oh shit! I am getting all of them. All
right, Justice League Generation Lost. I'm totally getting that book.
No.
What? That's the Giffen book.
Yeah.
It?
Good luck with yeah.
Anyway, then
also the Winnick book.
Yeah, Birds of Prey, the new Birds of Prey series. No, okay. No. Titans Villains for Hire Special number one.
No.
and Titans and Green Arrow number one. So essentially, you're buying half the books, though. So there you go.
Yeah, nah.
You're just gonna grunt.
I'll cut any of these if they disappoint me.
I'll cut
any
you.
Second.
I'll cut you.
Nah.
All right, so Tom, you had a book you wanted to talk about.
Meh. I want to talk about Kill Shakespeare number one from IDW.
Quite the controversial book.
I was looking it up, and it is quite controversial, which I thought was surprising when I started looking at the reviews. If you haven't heard anything about it, it's as the creators themselves give us the nice pitch line of it's like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but with Shakespearean characters.
And this is where I just want to interject real quick. I tried to read this. I got about four pages in, and I thought, I don't know enough about Shakespeare to do this, and I just stopped. I stopped.
Yeah.
I don't.
I knew just enough to get through, and then in looking at the controversy about the book, I realized I don't remember dick about Shakespeare.
Well, and that was,
had
I was
all
like,
these problems. I'm like, oh, yeah, Richard III is a hunchback.
I didn't. I was like, this might be wonderful. There was nothing wrong with it as far as I knew, other than I had no idea what was going on.
Well,
I was like,
Josh, do you know about the controversy?
Not really.
Okay, well, what's great is that Frank Miller's girlfriend hates it, which is just, hysterical. It was on Bleeding Cool. There was this whole, she wrote this whole diatribe about all the things they got wrong.
Like Shakespeare nerds, Shakespeare nerd out.
Totally.
Somehow she got a preview copy.
Yeah, well, IDW has been pushing this book, I met the creators at WonderCon, and they're cool guys, even though they're Canadian, and which might be a part of it. but
it's you, eh?
But they were really, you know, they're nice guys, and they're really behind the book, and they're. I mean, it like in a way that, like, you know, the young independent creators should be. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You know, they sent us an advanced copy of it, which was awesome, stuff like that. But Kimberly Cox is not only Frank Miller's girlfriend.
Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah, but she's a New York Shakespearean scholar, apparently.
Oh.
And she got her hands on this book, and it's literally like nine scrolls to get through all of her ranting about it. And she even says, come on, the villain tells the hero his task is to steer Shakespeare's quill. I just threw up in my mouth.
That reminds me of like the people who were still really against the Lord of the Rings movies. And just like, right.
I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I kind of felt like if you didn't know anything, the comparison to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is interesting, but I don't think it quite works because you could know nothing about the actual stories that the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen come from.
As evidenced by me.
Right. Yeah, and
completely
enjoyed the story. And enjoyed the story because there was enough actual stuff within the stories themselves to keep you going, and if you were interested in the other stuff or you had knowledge of it, it was kind of a cool, it was kind of a giant Easter egg hovering in the background. With this a little bit, if you don't know the characters, you kind of lose interest.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
totally.
If you don't understand what the twists are, you know, like, oh, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern did this instead of that. Or you don't recognize when a character is introduced.
You know what? It really made me remember when I was in high school and one of my friends, we were hanging out and we'd rented Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And like half the group the smarties were cracking up. And me and the other half were just like, okay.
They were faking it. Yes. They were faking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I wasn't an English major, you know? Like, so, yeah.
But it wasn't bad.
It's just. It's possibly a bit of a marketing risk.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of.
Well, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen example is so Shakespeare's characters band together to stop him from writing because he's ruining their lives, right? That's the premise.
Well, it's like a shared universe where they're all interacting, and Richard III is trying to get Hamlet to take out Shakespeare because everyone's under Shakespeare's a rumored wizard that controls everything. So all these characters are all in the same world and they're all interacting. It's kind of all the heroes versus all the villains of the Shakespearean plays. Yeah. And they're all interacting like that. Similar to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's a bunch of stuff that wasn't in a shared universe that's now been put into a shared universe.
Right. I don't know. It's a high concept. It's interesting. It's a miniseries, right?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Well, so look out for it. IDW put it out, and if you're into Shakespeare in English, you might not have heard about it, and it's controversy-laden, so there you go.
The art's pretty nice. I kind of like the art, even, you know, if you dig that sort of thing.
Well, so if I had a pick of the week this week, and again, I'm not the best thing I've read in the last 5 years, but I would say my best of the week. I'm not going to let that go just for a little while longer. I would go with Unwritten number 12. And I got to say, I'm a little upset that I haven't ever had this pick of the week on the week that this would have been pick of the week.
You need to manipulate the schedule like I do.
I know. And you do it years in advance. You're Machiavellian.
The chess pieces I'm putting in place for 2012, you have no idea.
Yeah.
5 years ago, he knew Flash number 1 was going to come out this week.
Exactly.
Set it in motion.
Now, there's a thing where in comics where they'll take like a sort of genre and flip it on its head. And in this one is basically, it's a sort of like a Winnie the Pooh kind of world with little fuzzy animals who talk to each other and they're pleasantly stupid. But one of them is a bunny and he sort of is self-aware that he's not really a bunny. He's this guy named Pauly Bruckner and, he really doesn't want to be here and he just walks around swearing the whole time. And I know that like, and in a lot of books, like that doesn't fly, cause it's just like, okay, great. You can swear, big deal. But it was really funny in this context. I know that you're reading it in trade, Ron. Do you read this, Tom?
Yes, I enjoy it. Yes,
and like this gets away from the main story that's been going on in Tom Taylor. This is one of those asides, like the Rudyard Kipling issue.
Yes,
And it was colored in like this sort of watercolory way, and it looks like a children's book. Beautiful artwork. Actually, the same artist, Peter Gross, did it, but it's a completely different style. And it's just this angry rabbit wearing a tie and a waistcoat, and he decides that he's got to go try to kill the little girl, the Christopher Robin of this universe, and he ultimately fails, and it's locked away in a closet.
This is one of those series that's great because the one-off issues almost always are going to end up being the ones I think I remember the most.
Absolutely.
Not that the main story isn't good, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like Sculpt in that yep. sense that when they need to go off in a tangent to do something else, because the Rudyard Kipling one was really good. The one where they gave sort of the backstory about the prison warden and his kids was yep. really good. And they're not exactly like carrying the momentum of the story forward, but they're extremely memorable within the whole context of that story, and they fit the tone of the whole book. So that really makes it fun to buy a book like this on a month-to-month basis.
And I think the thing is that that main storyline it's really complicated, and it can start to drag, and they've been really good about parsing out these kinds of issues.
Yes, the main story can be kind of, it has that the problem that the Vertigo books sometimes have where there's a mystery mm-hmm. and it goes on too long. And you get to the point yep. where you're like, do you need to know a little something to keep mm-hmm. going? And if you throw on these one shots, you can kind of extend it and keep interest in it, I feel, as far as being a reader of it goes.
This is like that episode of Lost a few weeks ago. With the one guy with the pretty face.
Oh, I love that episode. It was like a right. film. It was awesome.
That was the only episode of that I've liked in a year.
By the way, my new favorite thing is that's the Richard Alpert character. My new favorite my new favorite thing now is Freaking Out Richard, which we've had for the past two episodes. like panicking Richard Alpert is hysterical. By the way, I'm sorry not to diverge on Lost, but it cracks me up every time.
Guys,
but this is like that. Like if for whatever reason that storyline you wanted to get away from it, like and sometimes when you get away from a storyline like that where you do want to know what's happening next, and they pull you away from it, you're like, come on, just get to it. It's not like that with this at all. It was just a really entertaining issue, and also from a cartooning standpoint, for Peter Gross to switch up his style like this and do these sort of anthropomorphic animals, but really nail facial expressions like on a dog or on a cartoon rabbit or whatever. Like, he killed it. Like, it was really like an act of cartooning. So that was neat.
Oh, excellent. Cool. Awesome. So you should check out The Unwritten. And if you haven't been reading it, you can pick up the first trade, and you can get it from InStock Trades, who is sponsoring this episode. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. If you go to InStockTrades.com, you can save up to 37% off on all your trade paperback and collected edition needs. They got free shipping on orders over $50. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. They got new releases that come out every Wednesday, while Wednesdays is still the release day. And orders usually ship within 48 hours. So if you go to InStockTrades.com, you can get all your stuff. Where InStock Trades, where waiting for the trade has never been easier, which I don't think is their slogan, but I think Around Comics made it their slogan.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, because we never got
you guys
that said that. So
you guys owe me 25 cents.
Yes, we do.
I'll tell you what, they didn't fall for the Amazon glitch.
No, they didn't.
That's the kind of retail you want, dependable, rock
exactly.
solid.
Secrets. Secret stuff.
But so the folks behind InStock Trades and Discount Comic Book Service are also the folks putting on the Summit City Comic Con. So if you are in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area on May 22nd, you want to go to the Summit City Comic Con, where you can see Mike Norton, Jim Rugg, a whole host of other all-stars, comics all-stars, one-day show. There'll be some great deals there. So go to SummitCityComicCon.com for more information. So thanks InStock Trades and Summit City Comic Con for sponsoring this episode.
Oh, it's what everybody's been waiting for.
Well,
Ron,
and here's the
it's been
twist.
So long.
Here's the twist. X-Men Forever number 21.
Yeah?
Claremont's actually putting together a pretty good story.
Of course he is. Isn't he?
Yeah.
I can't believe this has almost been 2 years. I really feel like
It has. It's been 1 year. They're coming up biweekly.
Jesus.
You know why? Because Claremont has it contractually bound to get to write to be on two titles a month. And so they're just publishing X-Men Forever twice a month. Isn't that awesome?
Hey, you know what? Turns his shit in on time.
Yeah, exactly. So he's been building this story about this consortium that are trying to take down the mutants with Sentinels, and you know it's Trask and stuff like that, but the big reveal in this issue was that on the leader of this consortium is Tony Stark. I know, exactly, which is our shit. So you've got, and for some reason now Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. and the X-Men have joined forces because Nick Fury's like living at the mansion. But, so you've got Beast and Nick Fury going, listen, we know Tony Stark. He's an Avenger. We work with, you know, although actually in this continuity, Tony Stark still has a secret identity. So they're like, listen, Tony Stark's friends with Iron Man and Iron Man's an Avenger and I was on the Avengers with him. That's what Beast said. So it's an interesting little twist that I didn't see coming. And then there was a great little Kitty, Nightcrawler, and young Storm researching Trask. And that's where they found the Stark connection. It was very Buffy-esque. Back to I remember the early days of Buffy when they'd be in the library trying to figure something out. So
you watched those last year.
Yeah, I know.
Don't be like, oh, gee, I remember way back. No.
Yeah. But yeah, so amidst the chaos and the insanity, like last issue, Sabretooth had his hand cut off. Like, it's just insane. But actually, I find myself like, ooh, I can't wait for the next issue to see what's happening. So who knew? So, yeah, good times.
We all knew. We all knew this would happen to you.
We all knew, didn't we? So,
yeah, no one's surprised.
Yeah.
So, Tom, Green Hornet.
Year one.
If you haven't been paying attention, Dynamite has answered America's call for Green Hornet comics by putting
and
out.
How?
Like 12. There's at least a dozen. I think there's an origin of the car coming out like in a month, but the good part of it is I was able to find one that I liked, which is the Green Hornet Year One, which is the origin of the 1930s Green Hornet and Kato. It's done by Matt Wagner, who is doing he does the script and art direction, and the art's been really great. Francisco Francavilla does the colors on it, and it is a really cool sort of classic 30s crime story mixed with the origin stories for these two characters that involve Kato being in the Japanese army during the invasion of China during World War II. So there's some horrors of war type thing going on. And it's just extremely well done. And it's good enough that I forget that there are other Green Hornet comics, especially the Kevin Smith one, which I read. This reads like a really good comic instead of an unmade movie.
Yeah, which is what the Kevin Smith thing is. So,
yeah. So Green Hornet Year One, I'd take a look through it. If you dig the art, it's a very solid story.
Take a moment and imagine the sound of that Green Hornet movie tanking. I mean, it would have been like Pearl Harbor bad.
I do have to say there is... I'm not familiar with Green Hornet's history, but if it's true that he got the inspiration for being Green Hornet by the fact that a bunch of guys that were chasing him in Africa got killed by hornets while he was hiding, that is maybe one of the weirdest origins of anything I've ever seen, ever.
I was like,
I'm reading this story, and I'm like, oh, this is really, you know, it's like a crime story or some war stuff. And then it got to this part where I was like, this has to be canon, because I can't imagine if anyone got an opportunity to do it again that they would do it this way. But I was like, but it's good enough to get past that. You know, the rest of the stuff around it is very good.
So we are a few issues into the Powers relaunch, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. I am of two minds about this last issue.
Yep.
I really liked part of it, and then the other part I could take or leave. The sort of beginning bit about the angry girl with the father, that went on for a long time.
Agreed.
And there was a lot of swearing, and it just like when I was talking about like before the unwritten where the bunnies swore a lot, kind of worked. And this one I was like, all right, I get it. Yeah, fuck, it's fine. And then the second half of this where they go back into the story about the guys who killed Hitler.
Walker and his team. Yeah. I want more of that.
That was awesome. And it was good. It was exactly what I would want out of this book. And it's an interesting part of the history that they still haven't told yet. It was well drawn. I'm 100% in for that part.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that Oming's been killing it on the art. I think that especially some of the stuff, the experiment like with the blurry panels in this issue and stuff like that, I thought were really good, like for the flashbacks. I like that approach. I love the flashback stuff. There's still something off with the dialogue. There's just still something a little like Walker's voice is a little different, you know. And if Oming or Bendis are collaborating on the script, that's cool. That, you know, if Oming's even writing it, that's, you know, it's their book. That's great. It just the tone. It shows how subtle that voice can be. and you know, and they're just there was a couple like the Billy, mainly it was the Walker Billy Mace conversation where I'm like, ah, this doesn't feel right. But yeah, but so I'm enjoying.
But that story, you know, that story, you know, I'm not going to drop this book. I've read every issue of this book, and
yeah,
I'll
I'm
be
gonna
continuing
drop it.
To do that. And yeah. It's just because I expect so much out of it that if it's just a little bit off, you just yeah. But that second man, I want more of that story. Yeah. I'm down with that. Next up, BPRD King of Fear number 4. A lot of stuff happened in this one. Again, you cannot you can't Guy Davis. Man, there's not a better storyteller out there, I don't think. I couldn't tell you exactly what happened at the end of it though. but no, I think it's one of those
quick.
I think it's one of those things that
Tom will tell you what happened.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that like in the next issue will be very clear what happened, but it was sort of vague at the, you know, Liz unleashes a lot of fire and I think she killed a lot of people. There was a really neat reveal in this one that the frogmen who they've been fighting pretty much the whole time, they look a lot like Abe. And so you're like, oh, yeah, they do, don't they? And that was like a thing where they've all got to come to terms with it. And you know, it's like that's a big deal. That's a big turn. And you know, I feel like it is time that Liz Sherman, the fire lady, she's got to deal with this shit she's been dealing with for a long time. And I think we're going to see that. We are seeing it.
Do you think Abe, since the first time they ran across the frogs, was like, I hope no one notices.
Well, there was a fantastic two panels in here after they tell that to him. Yeah. There's two panels. And you see in the background, the two guys on either side of Abe are eyeballing him sideways.
Yeah,
and he's not saying anything. And the next panel is he turns and goes, what are you looking at? And they both look away.
Nothing.
It was spectacular cartooning.
He's like, I am also kind of a frog. I'm a frog man. You know, so it's different.
Different. So real quickly, Green Arrow number 32, a couple points about this. This is what an issue feels like on Fast Forward. They just blew through this story to get to the end of it. Basically, now Green Arrow gets caught for killing Prometheus and gets put on trial inexplicably, because didn't he kill Prometheus in another dimension? But anyway.
I don't know what the extradition laws are.
Exactly. And then you had, when he got arrested, you had the most anticlimactic superhero secret identity reveal ever when the cop pulls his mask and they're like, Oliver Queen, you mean the ex-mayor? And it's like, as if the fucking goatee wasn't enough of a tip off, really?
Wait, that really happened?
Yes. Like, I didn't know.
Didn't everyone know that?
I know. Like, I can't believe. Like, I thought everyone knew Oliver Queen was the Green Arrow. Like,
well, it would have been great if the guy would have pulled it off and said Oliver Queen, and someone's like, "Yeah,
yeah,
everyone, yeah, we all knew
exactly."
He signed Oliver Queen right there on the form.
It makes sense now, doesn't it? Yeah, I guess I don't know why I didn't notice that before.
And so you had that, and then I thought, oh god, he got arrested, and they're gonna like the rumors of doing the Oliver Queen in jail movie, the Green Arrow in jail movie. Like this is what they're laying the groundwork for that in the comics, so they could do that movie. But then he gets after all that hullabaloo, he gets the jury finds him not guilty, and so then the judge banishes him from Star City. Which can a judge do that?
I don't know.
It's like one of those wacky Texas judges in the Reuters, oddly enough, story.
It's like the judge says you're hereby exiled from Star City. Can you exile someone?
It's 6 months of Green Arrow, like in a tent city out in the desert, getting rehabilitated back to normal life. One of those crazy Texas judges. You're out of town.
The whole thing's just bizarre. So they've got him out of Star City, and this is teeing up Green Arrow number one. So we'll find out what happens with that.
Well, you really stuck with it, huh?
Oh yeah, I wrote it through. I mean, wrote it through. Yeah.
I was out a long time ago.
Yeah, no, you know me. I hold on for dear life. But anyway.
Good luck with that.
Yeah,
you're banished.
It's like Romeo and Juliet. Like this is America. It doesn't work like that. Anyway, so go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can do your pull list and you can rate and review your books. And we got a couple of user reviews here from the iFan base. And the first one comes from Diacampo, who reviewed Black Widow number 1 from Marvel and gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And at the time of this recording, nobody made it their pick of the week. 0 people.
Ooh.
And Dave says, I like the tone. I'm intrigued by the mystery, and I think writer Marjorie Liu's got some good ideas. The execution's a little off, but I'm willing to stick around for this arc to see how it all shakes out. And I was just curious because with the Iron Man movie coming up, it looks like they're rolling out a lot of Black Widow stuff. So, which is good.
You know what was good was Paul Cornell's Black Widow story.
Yeah, except the art was – we talked about that already.
It was half awesome.
Yeah, anyway.
But I looked at this one for a couple of minutes. Yeah, no, I'm good.
So, and the next review is a book that everyone's going to yell at us for not talking about this issue. Josh, you want to read it?
I will. I actually skipped this. I didn't get this in the store, so ooh. I hope it's not a spoiler in this. Jose Rivera, 83, chew number 10, give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and he's upsetting me, I'll be honest. Pick of the week percentage is a 0.21%. How is a book that good, but no one picked it? I bet Jose did. Anyway, as International Flavor comes to a close, it's nice to see Chew not succumb to the sophomore slump. We get closure to a lot of storylines in a short amount of time, yet it never comes at the expense of the story, which is moving along nicely. I can't wait to see where the third arc takes us, as I can honestly say Chew is one of the few comics that honestly, too honestly, surprised me time and time again. I would
agree with
that. Makes
me think
he's
lying. All these honestly,
yeah. It's a double negative. It's double honestly. Do honestly, honestly.
I'm going to be unpopular here and tell you that I think it did suffer from a little sophomore slump.
Ooh!
I found myself less interested in this arc than the first one. I thought it was the common second story arc where okay, take the hero and put him in a new kind of environment, like the island stuff, like putting him on this island. Like I don't know, it just this arc didn't do it for me as much as the first one.
The creators of Chew need to look at Green Arrow to see what it was that.
I sent it to you to be his butler.
No, don't get me wrong. It was good, and I love Rob Guillory's art. It was great. I just felt a little distanced from what the magic that we felt in the first arc was. That's all.
I feel like it's been a little while. Yeah. I don't know if that's the case. I just feel that way.
Remember a year ago we were like it would be a year of the summer we were rabid for it. Yeah,
it was the best book you had read.
Best book ever. This is the best comic book ever, guys. Really.
He's not. Don't believe his hype. Let's move along. If you want to write a review, make sure you go to ifanboy.com/comics. When you select all the comics you're pulling, you can print that out. Very, 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 very helpful. And then if you want to write a review, you can click on My Comics, and then you can write a review on any of the ones there. And we choose the best ones to put on the show and highlight some others on the website. So you should do that. It keeps everybody talking and lets you contribute to the site in a very real way. Also, if you want to help iFanboy, you like the show, it's all free. You're listening to it now. You're watching the video shows. You're seeing the explosion of content on the site. Tom, you're one of them. He's kicking the ass is what you're doing.
Totally.
We're dominating.
It's really pretty fun. But if you like all that stuff, you want to help support the site, it's it's now more important than it's ever been, to be completely honest. So make sure you click on the banners, go to the sponsors. We talk about the sponsors on this show and there's stuff on the site. Patronize those people. They're helping support the show and the site and everything. If you want to just order stuff from Amazon and that you were going to do anyway, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. You click on the little Powered by Amazon button, and then anything you buy will help send a little our way. And you were going to buy stuff anyway. And it's one of those things where like, oh, I have to buy dog food, but I also want a Star Trek Blu-ray. You can do that. And then that helps everybody. There's our shirts. Don't forget the shirts. There's the Fear Agent shirts. The first batches of those have started to come out. People have definitely started to get them. Are there any Battle Pug shirts left? I guess not.
There's a few left.
Okay. So. Battle Pug shirts. So they're a rarity is what you're saying.
Yes,
they are.
Get them while they last. Yes.
The Fear Agent shirt, Rick Remender and Jerome Pena is the only Fear Agent shirt that there is. And it's a damn fine book, so you should get that shirt. You can go to ifanboy.com/store to get those. Or, as always, you can be a member. That is the most direct and simple way. It's the cost of one bad comic book a month or a good comic book, either way. And, we've heard about the deal that we made and everything, but you guys are still the main source of keeping everything going, and we need that more than ever. Nothing's changed in that sense. You are the ones making it happen, and we are so appreciative to you. Even Tom's still paying. I guess we should.
We need to cancel your membership, Tom.
That's true.
You'll have to send back the comic book. You can come in for $4 a month.
I will. I got some of the three worst comic books.
we took extra special care in your package.
Yeah, I know.
The more we like somebody, the worse a comic book they get. Yep. That means that for $4 a month or $42 a year, you are going to get an iFanboy prize pack, some stickers, some buttons, a comic book of our choosing. And then honestly, if you get a horrible, horrible comic book, that's a sign of affection, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
Or if you've got money to burn or you really, really like us, you can send $10 a month or $100 a year. But it's the main source of income for the site, and it's very important to us, and we thank you for that. All the members, I mean, honestly, even to this day, people have stuck around and supported the show. We really, really appreciate it. So thank you, and if you haven't, if you've been thinking about it, man, now's a good time. Yeah. Con season's coming up, man. Cons
ain't cheap. Babies are hungry. The only thing that makes Josh's kid go to sleep is the smell of money.
All right, so on to the emails. Our first email comes from Dave Schrammick, who writes in, says, in listening to the iFanboy writing staff lament that Second Coming number one ended with a list of X-books to read in order to get the story, I started to wonder if the X-universe would benefit from the Amazing Spider-Man treatment. And I don't mean Quesada magicking away what he considers to be the problem with mutants, which he has already done.
Snap.
Yeah. Since Spidey's reboot, we've seen nigh-weekly stories with a roster of great teams. They managed to balance the long arc megaplots with the week-to-week arcs really well, and I vastly prefer this to having read four Spider-Man titles a month, especially if I was only reading one or two, then suddenly I had to read them all to follow along with some big spider saga. So I put it to you, the iFanboys, would you want to see all the X-books, or at least the in-continuity X-books, folded into one Uncanny X-Men comic with rotating teams, both creatively as the focus of the issue?
Well, now, I think that I'm the best qualified to answer this.
Well, no, I actually didn't want to answer it X-Men specifically. Because this is an example of what happens in comics where something good happens, like Amazing, what they're doing with Amazing Spider-Man was in response to 52 as being a success as a weekly comic. Yeah. It's so much so that they hired away Steve Wacker to do it, the editor of 52. But the problem was that they come up with a good, innovative idea that works for one title, and then everyone wants to replicate that for every other title. You know, and DC drove the weekly book into the ground with Countdown. And Trinity, you know, so I don't think that the X-Men or any other book should do what they're doing with Spider-Man. I think what they're doing with Spider-Man is awesome and unique to Spider-Man. Let it be unique. Yeah.
The difference in those two, actually, man, I was making a joke about being able to answer this, but I actually can. Spider-Man is one character.
Yes.
And the X-Men are many characters broken into various groups. And if I'm not an X-Men reader, I'd like the ability to pick and choose some of those things. I wouldn't want them to all be wrapped up. If I just want to read Young X-Men or I just want to read X-Factor, I can do that, or just Uncanny. When you wrap them all up into one thing, then you know everybody's in for everything all the time and you've got a checklist again, you know, really.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, they were bitching and moaning about the checklist, but like, as and I said, I've said it, you know, I said it last week, I said it as the X-Men fan, like, I'm psyched for the checklist. That's how it used to be. I read all those books on brightest day. Like, you know, like we were just talking about that earlier. Like, I read those books. I'm fine with it. You know,
I got to say, the checklists haven't really – I mean, I didn't read everything from Blackest Night. I didn't read everything from all the other stories. I followed along. It's fine. Also, Steve Wacker edits that book? I don't know. You never see his name on it. It's weird. Wacker here. I know.
Yeah. Anyway, Tom, what do you think?
I don't think it would work for X-Men. Pretty much for the reason Josh said. You know, if someone would be extremely unhappy, they'd be like, "Oh, I love X-Force," and X-Force shows up for three panels every week. You know, for it doesn't work that way with a big set of characters.
It's too many characters. Yeah,
constant ongoing crossover.
Yeah. The reason it works for Spider-Man was if there was a problem with having four Spider-Man books, it was that all four of them had different tones that would have benefited from all having the same tone as one Spider-Man book. That's a strength for the X-Books. That's why there are so many X-Books. Because they have had success selling different tones to different people.
Right, with the similar theme of mutants and, you know, that whole world.
Yeah. So I don't think it would work.
Spider-Man, you want that to be a constant, sort of.
Yeah. I love the Spider-Man format now, yeah.
It's too much.
Really?
I'll say it.
It's a
big commitment.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a huge commitment to, and maybe if you love that character enough, that the getting it three times a month or four times a month works out. But
$12 a month is what I pay for HBO.
Well, my argument has been is that, but the thing about the Spider-Man, you're right, it's a big commitment, but like it has been consistently good. With the exception of a handful of arcs in the past year and a half or 2 years, they've been some of the best Spider-Man comics I've ever read.
See, they have a built-in defense against that, and the fact that if you read a disappointing one, a new one comes out the next week to dull your pain, you know, instead of like festering over it for 3 weeks if you've read a really bad Spider-Man comic.
Right, but the thing is, the one that comes after it has got to be good to combat that.
You know, unless like, you're Ron.
Yeah. Well, no. But I mean, if they did what they're doing with Spider-Man 8 years ago, and the Spider Brain Trust was JMS and Howard Mackey and Paul Jenkins, it would not be good right now. It whatever magic they've tapped into with Bob Gale and Mark Waid and Zeb Wells and Dan Slott and Fred Van Lente and Joe Kelly, it's working.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I haven't read any of it since Brand New Day. I'm kidding. I don't know. I just wanted to say it.
I stopped that one more day, so I don't know.
But it's.
I'm just angry about it still. Yeah. I can't even talk about it.
There's not a lot of things that I would. That a continuing book that I would buy 3 or 4 times a month.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a lot.
Yeah. I agree. I agree entirely. Next email, because we can't talk about this forever. I bet we could. Gary Lewis from Austin, Texas. Must be cool. Hi, guys. After quite a few years of just buying whatever I pleased at the LCS, it's time to scale down. Between having a baby on the way, I hear you, bro, and running out of space to store all my boxes, dude, simpatico. I really have no choice. Just thinking about this hurts my head. Aw, you're my bro. Sorry for the commentary. At the moment, my plan is to pick one family of books from DC and one from Marvel and buy everything else in trade. Of course, I just changed my mind while writing because that leaves out Invincible. Seriously, this hurts my head. If you guys weren't doing the show and had to be more selective on Wednesdays, how do you think you would go about it, and what would your strategy be?
Oh, the irony.
I always have a plan for how to handle it. If I had to cut everything back, I just wouldn't buy books 1 week. And see what I actually cared about.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Because there are books if you don't pick up and then you forget about it and you don't remember until the next one comes out, you might not want to buy the next one either.
Was that for me? That was Secret Warriors. I missed an issue of Secret Warriors and completely didn't realize I missed it, and then the next one came out and I was like, oh, I missed this one. Oh, and I just stopped buying it. You know?
Yeah, I do that a lot. I forget about most of them anyway, even the ones I really like.
Okay,
so I don't
know if that works. Pare it down. You can only buy one DC, one.
I would never categorize it like that,
but
though.
It's a fun game. Play the fucking game.
I know, but.
One DC.
Play the game, Josh. Get the game, Harding. Get the game.
One DC book, one Marvel book, one indie title. You get 3 titles a month. Okay? So that's a budget of $15 a month, let's just say. Okay.
I'd get. Josh is obstinate.
I'm not playing.
I'd probably get The Flash.
Connor's not here. Someone's got to do it.
Marvel, I would probably get Fantastic Four. Interesting. And then the independent comic I get would be Tarot, which I'm not reading now. But I would start, because I assume that would just be a good mix to have something pornographic. I don't want to play this game.
See?
I don't.
Defense your senses, sir.
See, this is the thing. The comic book fans, like, when they talk about, like, budgeting or figuring stuff out, everything has to be, like, a spreadsheet. Like, I have to have this from that and this from that and this from that.
Just skip
a week, and then whatever you missed, go by.
Well, I want to keep reading The Walking Dead. I want to keep reading Hellblazer.
Then buy them.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to probably read those. And then when, you know, I'd buy some trades.
You can only buy one.
Honestly,
I could
mostly cut out Marvel and DC. I could.
Yeah.
And then, like, when I hear something is really good, I would just buy it later. I don't need to buy those weekly issues at all. I don't have that need.
Yeah, I wish I could shake it.
No, I know, but like
Green Arrow for the past 10 years.
If you were to ask me a week ago, and you've liked like 5 issues of it.
I know. I hated that book for years.
You are banished from iFanboy.
I mean, if Rucka hadn't left DC, I mean, I'd probably say I keep reading Greg Rucka's Detective Comics. Like that's a no brainer. I keep reading that. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to stop buying Powers.
Right. Gary Lewis, this is what I'll tell you. Do not put any qualifier on what you're buying besides what you like.
Yeah.
Yep.
Instead of some set of rules, you know, like just get what you like, and
there must always be rules, though.
This is not Vietnam. There are rules here.
I did not watch men die face down in the sands at Khe Sanh.
So that you would not buy DC and Marvel. Everyone be equal up is they would totally help you out.
All right. Well, now you got to stop at the Vietnam joke. So if you have any question for us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. If you have a question for us, call the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Normally we do voicemails, but we want to have more time to talk and laugh with Tom. So we skipped the voicemails this week. We'll get back to him next week when Connor gets back. All right, so as you might have seen on iFanboy.com, April is a giveaway month, and a little bit of May. It spills over into May. But we're giving away a ton of stuff. This week we're giving away an awesome Top Cow prize pack, which contains, as I pull up the list, please bear with me.
Before you do that, I'm just going to say that this winner has the best name ever.
Yeah.
It's just like a cowboy accountant.
So you're getting Impaler Volume 1, Strike Force Volume 1, Freshman Volume 1, Top Cow's Best of Michael Turner Volume 1, Wanted Assassins Edition, which is awesome, Pilot nice. Season Volume 1, Magdalena Blood Divine, and Darkness Volume 1, signed by the artist Michael Broussard.
So, can I guess the name before you announce it?
Sure.
Flint McSaddle Leather.
No. the winner of the Top Cow prize pack is Gene Law. So congratulations, Gene. You won the Top Cow prize pack. Tune in next week when we're going to give away the DC Comics prize pack, which is a bunch of Starman trades and some hardcovers, that damn Kevin Smith Batman cacophony that that seems to be spawning like tribbles around the iFanboy office.
I think I just saw one scurry across my floor.
So, yes, definitely tune in for that, as well as the Greek Street Volume 1, The Winterman, all good, Ex Machina, good stuff. So go to iFanboy.com. There's a red post about the giveaways to find out what more we're giving away. As we mentioned earlier, Connor and I were at C2E2 this past weekend. It hasn't happened yet, but you're listening to it after it, so I'm sure we had a wonderful time and had a great time with all of our friends in Chicago, and we missed Tom, and Tom, we wished you were there, but so what can you do?
Hey, I wished I was there as well.
Yes.
So. I'm starting to wish that I had gone.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a scheduling error on my end. this last week, you may have this week coming up is Kick-Ass Week.
Yes.
Yeah, so the movie review.
Yep.
That we did a podcast. We saw it. We talked about it. We kind of liked it. There it is. Spoiler. but you know that. And we talked to JRJR at one point, so make sure you go back and find that. Last week, the don't miss was Jamie McKelvey on Siege Loki. By the way, we didn't talk about that. I really enjoyed that book.
Oh, McKelvey drew the fuck out of that. We didn't talk about it because we covered it on Don't Miss. So go listen to Don't Miss. Yeah, definitely.
That was good. And then this week I'm going to be talking to Ron Mars about Magdalena, cool. Number one. It's the ongoing of that character. So if you've ever been curious about the Top Cow stuff, that's a good one. Also, Ron Mars is he's a veteran. He's worked for everybody. So, this guy's been around. It's interesting. So make sure you miss – that's the Don't Miss podcast that comes out on – Monday.
Yes, and go to iTunes and subscribe to Don't Miss if you haven't. It's a great short little podcast with a little mini interview with the creator about the book book coming out this week. It's a good one to listen to, so check that out. And that's posted every Monday on iFanboy.com along with a crap ton of content. We rolled out a whole bunch of new writers, including Mr. Tom Caters, who the number of people who make Josh, Connor, and I look bad is now times by like 10. Such great content on the site. You can find it all on iFanboy.com, as well as my pick of the week review, my book of the month review, which we're going to be talking about next week. We're going to be talking about what was the book of the month, The Rocketeer. so definitely a good time to go to iFanboy.com, check it out. It's such great content. So many of you have been checking it out. We really thank you for that. We also recently added Word Balloon to the mix, so every Tuesday you can get a new Word Balloon. It's just great stuff going on. We've also got a video show that comes out every Wednesday. Last week we had a show all about the Kick-Ass movie. We hope you enjoyed that with my spoilerific interviews with the cast. And this week we're
talking awkward.
This week we're talking about The Losers, which the movie is coming out this weekend, I believe, as well, or the weekend after. I forget.
It's next weekend. Kick-Ass this past weekend,
and then The Losers. So we don't spoil anything in The Losers video show. So it's safe to watch.
I don't interview anybody. I hope. So, yeah. That's fine.
So yeah. So go.
They're just lucky they came out before the A-Team movie.
Yeah, it's true. They are. So go to iFanboy.com. Check all that fun stuff out.
Hey, you want to contact us at iFanboy? Write to contact@iFanboy.com. So that's perfect. Or you can leave us a voicemail. We normally do get to them, but we talked a lot this week. There you go. That's 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Don't ramble on forever. And make sure you leave your name. Tell us where you're from. Besides that, have fun with it. Call up. Give us some questions. Yeah. Give us good content. We need that.
And if you enjoy us, if you enjoy this podcast, go write a review on iTunes. Helps people find out, whether or not the show's worth listening to or not. Helps a lot of things out. But more importantly, tell other people about iFanboy. We've been telling you to tell other people about this podcast. Tell them about the website as well. We're doing so much new stuff on the website. We're trying to get more people onto it to read what we've been doing. Go to twitter.com/iFanboy. You can follow us there. You can find all the fun stuff we're doing there. But tell your friends about iFanboy. Tell them this great website that you dig. If you don't go to the website, go to the website. Read the stuff. It's good stuff.
You're not kidding about that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So check it all out. Tom, thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure.
So everyone can find your column on iFanboy on Fridays, right?
Yep. Fridays at noon Eastern time, the right time.
And you are a podcaster yourself.
Yeah, I do Tom vs. the Flash, where I talk about old Flash comic books. And some people think it's sad, I guess, but funny. No.
I think you should change it to Tom vs. Frank Curtis.
He doesn't show up again either. He disappears.
What the fuck happened to Stacey Conwell?
I know. If I can get one of those with Jeff Johns, that's what I'm asking.
One of those cold cases. One of those cold cases. Yeah,
the missing case of Stacey Conwell.
Stacey Conwell. It's a story a lot of people know. Mid-70s, some girl that lived with the Allens. She was around for 12 issues. It's important that we go back and figure this out. Oh, man.
It's not.
So people can find you just by searching Tom vs. the Flash, right? On Google or iTunes. Yeah.
Yeah, Google, whatever. Look up Tom Caters.
All right, cool.
Search on Yahoo.
Go to web crawler.
Lycos.
Alta Vista.
All right. So thanks again, Tom. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I enjoy it.
Yay. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm...
We fell apart.
Yeah. Tom didn't decide to follow the script. He's not a team player.
Oh, my God. I don't even have it open. Let me see.
I'll do it again.
I'm Josh. Oh, wait.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. right on your tail. Getting a cabman, traveling on buses, reading the graffiti up our slats. It's a fantastic entertainment.